Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I'm your host, Joe. Joining as usual on this party cast, we've got Purnell and Chris and Aki. How's everyone doing?
Ooh, pretty party. Good.
Leftover pretty sushi. Good. I'm doing okay.
Fucking yeah!
Day ahead. The sushi helps.
Leftover sushi? That's just
that
as awesome
feel?
As BX Latino heat subbing.
What? I don't know any of that that just happened.
I said leftover. Your sushi's just as good as BX Latino heat subbing for his 11th month, which is
awesome. I think the subbing is significantly better than leftover fucking sushi.
Yeah.
It was good because it's only left over by a couple hours. It wasn't like by a day.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, a couple hours in the fridge. I just couldn't eat it all in one sitting.
Okay, you said in the fridge. All right.
Yeah,
when you said leftover sushi, all I was thinking of was like the sushi that you get at like gas stations. I was like, no, that's
no. It was restaurant sushi that I had for lunch today that I couldn't finish because I had a doctor's appointment.
Okay,
so I finished it later and it was still delicious. Like I said, we'll see. Whatever I don't get through to before I go to bed tonight, that'll probably be gone forever though. So I'm just preparing myself for sobs. Delicious sobs. But yeah,
I mean, that you don't finish, you could bake it
mounted
into,
on the wall.
No,
What was Aki saying? I don't know what you're talking about.
You could,
on the wall.
That stuff to make rolls and stuff. You could put one in it and turn it into a roll.
That's
not
an
bad
idea. I like it.
I like the idea of taking your sushi and mounting it to the wall, like trophy.
No one's doing that,
sushi.
Joe. No one's doing that. That sounds disgusting, and it would
big
stink.
Big mouth belly bass. The later,
well,
you
no, guess. you would put it into epoxy, and then it'd be completely covered in epoxy, and it wouldn't smell bad because it wouldn't smell other than epoxy, which is smellier and shit. But
throw
that'll go the fuck
in.
Away.
Of course, now I'm singing Big Mouth Billy Bass crap. Throw me back in the water. That thing is terrible.
It's an institution.
It made so much money.
My piece of shit stepdad used to have one of those. Former stepdad, thankfully. He's an asshole. I don't know if I've ever talked about him on this show.
You don't need to. Leave him in limbo.
That's generally a requirement for a stepdad, though, I think. Is
be an asshole?
Well, that and the fishing thing, because my stepdad has one, too, and he's
Some kids get lucky to get that. Like, well, I thought stepdad was going to be an asshole, but it turned out he's actually pretty friendly. I don't know
you
how.
You know why
it works.
He's friendly? Because he doesn't own a Billy Big Mouth Bass.
Yeah. Yeah.
Back in the water.
Wow.
Back in.
This is. I was not expecting such hate for Big Mouth Billy the Bass when.
If a stepdad does.
Turning
if
into
a
sushi.
Stepdad has that, he is probably a fucking redneck.
Throw him back in the water. God. Now I'm stuck
so
on
Chris,
shit.
How was your weekend?
Let me try and remember.
Aki, how was your weekend?
very, very hot. And that was mostly it. I've built some of a model and I've played a lot of review games, but it wasn't too bad other than the in the past 24 hours I've had my electricity go off twice for about 10 hours in total. And it's too hot for that.
It's too hot. This summer heat is just
hot today.
Yeah. I still have to go out and mow more of my lawn. It took me 2 hours because it'd been like 3-ish weeks or so since I had last mowed it.
Y'all mowing your lawns, just embrace the jungle.
The city, after it gets so long, the city will come in and mow it themselves and they charge you like $50 an hour for it, and it's a minimum of 3 hours.
Well, I'm not taking him because unfortunately the jungle includes mosquitoes and fuck those things.
Yeah, we get mosquitoes and fleas if our grass gets too tall. So I like to get rid of it because I don't have $150 just to give the city for like a half hour job on a riding lawnmower that they'd spend on it. So exactly. I spent 2 hours and only got like 1/3 of my.
What kind of a mower do you done. Like? Do you have a weed whacker or something? Are you using scissors?
No, I use a push mower, and it was just really, really long. And so it was hard to get to because, again, it'd been like 3 or more weeks. I'm probably leaning to or more because I'm almost 6 foot tall and it was up to my knee in many places.
Good Lord.
Yeah. Up to your knee. I am not athletic. Well, I guess maybe if your grass was standing up, that's how. Because, yeah, like my grass was long, but it wasn't standing up. And I kind of assume that's why it wasn't, as you describe it, up to my knees or whatever. Because it was like.
Do you live in a fucking wheat field that it's that high?
No, I mean.
Kind of. I wouldn't be shocked if I had some wheat in there, to be honest.
I mean, is it maybe like, were you getting like the crazy rains like we got where I'm at right now? Because that's why our grass.
Yes, bad. We've gotten a lot of rain. So it grew real big, real quick, and we're still getting rain, which is why it's not done yet. Because I would have mowed it yesterday and today, but it's rained both days. So it's like, you motherfucker, I just want to finish this yard for fuck's sake, please. I want to finish it before the back end gets just as long as the front end is currently. I want it all to be flat. Fuck.
Yeah, because unfortunately, it is not having that shit. It does not want to go, which is why I got out there today when I was like, wait a minute. There's a 30% chance of it raining tonight. Yeah, let me get this done. What about the gym? They got the gym in the backyard.
There was a 2% for today. 2% chance, and it rained half the fucking day. And I was like, you bitch. Today it wasn't going to be cold, but the humidity was going to be the lowest it's been in like 2.5 weeks. And I was so excited. It was like, yes, it's going to be 88 degrees, but the humidity will be under 50 for the first time in like 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks. Yay. And then it fucking rained.
Yeah, the rain kingdom does not care. The rain kingdom's all about that pain.
I'm just convinced meteorologists are just making up numbers at this point.
Rainfall, more like painfall.
Basically.
So, Chris, how was your weekend? Did you figure it out yet?
Yeah, I think what tripped me up is that I had a 4-day weekend, and so I was like, what was weekend and what was not? I took off a couple days of work because Thursday I got to see one of my favorite bands in concert, and then the next day I just didn't go to work.
Band? We need
Sparks.
I've never heard of them.
Yeah, okay. Most people haven't. They're actually kind of famous for not being famous, even though they've been around for like 50 years.
Oh, Jesus.
They're from like from
kind
the
of feel
olden
bad
days.
For them now.
Well, if you Sparks. Have a... If you like bands like Duran Duran or New Order or like, you know, any of those, They Might Be Giants, Weird Al Yankovic, any of those guys, they all got their stuff from Sparks.
Okay, so I'm gonna have to go look up Sparks then, because
I'll
like them then.
The Hot Fuzz director Edgar Wright actually made a documentary about them lately called The Sparks Brothers. If you check that out, that is a perfect way to start learning about them. They kind of started in like glam rock and then got into electronic before they were like doing electronic pop like in the late 70s before like everybody else was doing it. And they're two brothers and they're very cool and I love their songs. They have like 26 or 7 albums now and they just came out with one this year that's great. And yeah, I saw them in Austin for the first time ever because they hadn't been touring a lot lately, but here in the last couple of years, they have been like getting out a lot more, and this time they actually came to Austin. I had to go to Chicago to see them last year.
Jeez.
But, so that was really exciting. And then, yeah, like most of the rest of the weekend was just playing video games. Like, I bought Chocobo GP, so I've been playing Mario Kart with Final Fantasy characters.
Nice.
I'm sorry.
No, it's fine.
I heard
great,
it's good
especially...
now that it's not filled with microtransactions.
Exactly. Yeah, they got rid of the microtransactions and then knocked 50% off. I think it's right now $25 to download, so I was like, hell yeah.
Okay, then I'm not sorry. That actually sounds great, getting rid of all that.
Yeah, and it's actually very fun.
Yes.
Although I will say the thing I didn't know is that when you choose the default option for like racing, I didn't realize that's an online thing. And so it just, before I even like saw the game, I was in an online match, like a 64 race tournament or whatever, or not tournament, but you know, 64 participants elimination style. And I made it to round two just based on nothing. Like, it controls just like Mario Kart. So I was like, okay, well, I don't know these courses or this character, but I'll see what I can do. And I got third place in the first race and then fifth place in the next one, which didn't qualify me for the next round. And then I started playing at one player mode and actually learned it. And it's got a very funny story mode. Great for people who like Final Fantasy 4, 5, and 9. As well as Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, because there's overlap with, it's the same world as Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon, so you'll see a lot of familiar characters from that.
I was about to ask what game you're talking about, but now I get it.
Yeah, Chocobo GP.
Chocobo's GP, and that's why Joe says the game it should have been, yep.
And yeah, pretty much, yeah.
And Mega Man's doing the same thing later this year, too, so we'll see how that turns out.
Yeah, so I really, I'm enjoying it a lot so far. I'm going to get right back to it after this show.
Nice. Well, hopefully it won't take too long because we don't have too many games to review tonight. But before we get to that, I wanted to mention something. Chris, you talked about going to, where, Chicago to see Sparks?
Yeah.
I might have a road trip in my future to see a band. Actually, two of them. Because they're 90s bands that might be having comebacks. The first, they kind of already have a comeback going on. They had a new album out this year, and they're performing in Baltimore in September, Stabbing Westward.
I remember that.
Never heard of them.
Love that band.
Oh, bloody.
Love that band.
That's more Joe's style than my style in terms of music, but I know who you're talking about, and they're pretty good.
Yeah, you might know songs like What Do I Have to Do or Shame. If you heard them, you'd probably be like, oh, that band.
You and my sister have like really similar tastes. She loves like chunky like hard rock kind of stuff, especially like 90s, and I was like more into like weird esoteric and like what my one non-white friend calls quirky white people music. Quirky, I don't mean my people. One friend who is not white, I mean it's one friend who says that who happens to not
white
be white
people who laugh at quirky,
yeah, quirky white people music is apparently my genre.
Hey, whatever works.
But, I can see that.
Quirky white people music.
What's the other?
The other band is from St. Louis, and I've been wanting to see this band forever. They're one of my all-time favorite bands. They haven't put out an album in like 20 some years, but they just re-released their self-titled on blue vinyl this year. And it sold out near immediately, so it's doing pretty well.
Is it Blue October?
No. Close. But no, Gravity Kills.
Oh, Hoobastank. Huh?
Gravity Kills.
Okay.
Name
I know that name.
Song.
That name sounds familiar.
By Blame. You probably haven't heard of any of them. You may have heard them if you watched the movie Seven.
I did not watch Seven,
did
but
not
the
watch
name
that, no.
Still
feel like
familiar.
I've seen that, but I'm not.
I don't watch Kevin Spacey.
Well, I believe they were the credits in that movie, and then they also had the song Goodbye on the Mortal Kombat soundtrack.
Wait.
Now I do know the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, so.
You didn't watch Kevin Spacey before the controversy, too?
No, actually, I was quite fond of him before the controversy, so you caught me up in a, caught me in a lie.
Yeah, because Seven is old as hell. I'm like, wait a minute.
No, I used to find him quite charming, actually. I liked a lot of his movies.
I mean, I definitely get that. I was just surprised. He was like, yeah, I don't watch. I was like, wait a minute, Seven is old. I'm just used to not watching movies.
I don't like anything in movies, really. I'm just like, there's so much, like, it takes either, like, a whole litany of, like, just, you know, all these kind of things to, like, draw me into, like, a movie or whatever. Or you could just say Godzilla, and I've already bought a ticket. Like,
and
I'm
God
so
Suki.
Yeah, yeah. like the Hanna-Barbera cartoon.
Seven was the Seven Deadly Sins one. Okay.
Yeah, with Brad Pitt.
Yeah, with Brad Pitt. And,
yeah, I've seen
What's
that.
In the
that
box?
Was an okay movie.
What's in the fucking box?
I think
are we going to have another spoiler warning? Like,
no, we won't talk about what's in the box. No one needs to know what's in the box.
Especially
him. He did not need to know.
The two movies I've seen in 2023, and that was the Mario movie and the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
I just recently watched that.
Oh, wasn't it good?
Loved it. It was so great.
It was so good. I'm going to buy the Mario Blu-ray. I want to watch it again.
Yeah, I've heard the Dungeons and Dragons movie was pretty solid.
Yeah,
I picked that one up. I haven't watched it yet, so no spoilers.
I'm not going to spoil. I'm just
so good.
I'm just going to say it's like, as somebody who doesn't know the first thing about D&D, which would be me, I only know video games, but it was like really entertaining, so very accessible. However, like everybody I know that does know D&D was like, oh yeah, this is like legit. Like all the writing in this is, you know.
Yeah, they could point most to of things. It, like the abilities they could use and stuff, most of it was true to D&D. I was impressed.
I have a moment where they sit around the bar trying to spec out their characters.
No, it wasn't like that. But, I mean, you kind of got that feel of it, you know? Like, you could almost see that happening off camera. It wasn't somebody trying to force D&D into a movie or force, you know, a movie out of D&D. It was just, like, it felt, like, really natural and, like, it, like, what I like, which is just a callback to, like, you know, the good old sword and sandals genre, which we haven't seen since, like, the 80s. More wholesome, because sword and sandals movies were never wholesome.
I've never heard of sword and sandals. What are you talking about? Like,
you haven't?
Well, the pinnacle of it would be Conan the Barbarian. But like,
oh, or like Red Sonja?
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, the Barbarian Brothers, you know, their barbarian movie. You know, okay. There was one I liked a lot that I should not have watched because it's extremely rated R, but and it's really stupid, too, but I have to remember the title. Yeah, it was like The Sword and the Sorcerer or something like that, I think. It's and it's just like goofy shit, but it's like it was like stuff that it's like movies that, you know, that were like would have made like the best video games, except they usually didn't.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, that whole genre was just like way cool, and it just like kind of had this moment that kind of got killed, and it's only been brought out, you know. It really rarely gets brought out. And, you know, like, now fantasy movies are, like, more serious because of Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings or whatever. But, like, they used to just be goofy fun. And that's what I feel Dungeons & Dragons kind of brought to it.
Nice. Yeah, that's why I want to watch it. So
Yeah.
It's either going to be watching that or taking a trip to St. Louis to see Gravity Kills. One of the two.
You should do both. Watch it tomorrow.
That was a joke, Aki. I'll watch it eventually. I don't know if I'll go to St. That'd be awesome if they were performing, because if they were performing in St. Louis, I would absolutely take a week off. And
nice.
I'd be like, yo, Ale Sean, clear your couch. I'm coming to visit.
Always nice to have friends in all the states.
In other area codes.
Well, should we get to Sean's reviews?
Yeah.
Or is there anything else anyone wanted to talk about?
No. I was just saying that Ale Sean is the only person I know in Missouri now.
He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. Great.
What's ailing Sean?
His kids, maybe.
He loved them kids.
Anyway, first game to talk about tonight is Gravity Circuit, developed by Domesticated Ant Games, published by PID Games, released July 13th on Switch, PS4, PS5, and PC for $16.99. Gravity Circuit is a flashy, action-packed 2D platformer in the spirit of console classics. Follow Kai, a lone operative war hero who harnesses the mysterious power of the gravity circuit on an adventure in a futuristic world inhabited by sentient robots. Pernell, what is going on in Gravity Circuit?
What's going on in Gravity Circuit is if somebody decided they wanted to make a game that had a feeling or a flow similar to that of Mega Man X, but instead of having a gun, you get down and dirty with your fists. That is Gravity Circuit. Also, is 8-bit style, not 16. Though I guess some might call it like high-end 8-bit. I don't know. I'm not a tech wizard. I'm just a guy reviewing a game. And the game itself is, I see, a lot of fun. This game has been on my radar since probably summer of a year or two ago, because the composer has been, Dominic Nymark, has been producing this music for quite some time. Which means the game itself likely has been in development for quite some time as well. But yes, it doesn't disappoint. In similar Mega Man fashion, you start out, you get the narrative gist, and you get thrown into the intro level stage as Kai, and you're trying to protect the city from a disturbance. and they introduce you immediately to like your basic repertoire of moves. You can run, you can jump, you can punch the crap out of people. And you also kind of have special moves that function similarly to like some maybe something like Smash Brothers, where by pressing a direction pad and the special move button, you will trigger a special move. Of course, obviously, at the beginning of the game, you have one special move equipped, so each one does the same thing, which is like a flying strike. And special moves are done by using energy bars. Energy bars being something that you get one bar per use, and to regenerate the bar, you have to collect basically like energy leading up to a 100% fill on a gauge. So it's not like in Mega Man, the old Mega Man games, where just getting an energy chip will allow you to use your special move. You got to get a couple of them. So use these bad boys sparingly. Initially, you start with only being able to do one at a time, and then you have to charge up the meter again. But eventually, you'll get upgrades hidden in certain stages that will allow you to bank more special moves at a time. So eventually, you'll get to the end of the intro stage. You will fight a boss. And then once the boss gets defeated, you'll get sent to the main crux of the game, which is the army base that you're in, basically the army you're working with, and a general who tells you to go fight the 8 other robots, basically former members of your former team that have gone rogue, and you don't understand why. And each one is attacking a different area of the city, and you have to go there and defeat them. One thing I didn't mention in regards to the moves, well, actually two things I neglected to mention in the moves, are two things that actually make the gameplay, even before the special moves, a lot of fun. There is a hook shot, which can be used both for attacking and also to swing around. You start the game with it, whereas in a lot of games, you got to find it or buy it or whatever. But you can use it to pretty much grab the walls or the ceilings. If you grab a ceiling, you'll go immediately into like a swinging stance if you do it from an angle. If you do it from the straight, like going straight up, you'll just pull yourself up to the ceiling and you can create momentum to start swinging. If you grab a wall horizontally, you rather than just like pulling yourself in like you would in a lot of games that have hook shots, you'll actually pull yourself off the ledge you're on and then go into a swing. I'm telling you that now because otherwise you might do like I did and swing right into some spikes thinking, oh, it's going to pull me to the wall. No, it's not. Now, those things are a lot of fun, especially once you get to the point where you're actually using your run button because you maintain the momentum from your run when you run into a swing. It is a lot of fun to use the hook shot to get around in areas that make allow you to make use of it. Now, as you're exploring the levels, in addition to just trying to get to the end and beat the boss, there's also some pickups that you can find in the level, such as increased health, increased special move gauge items, but also, similar to what was done in Mega Man X8, there are also hostages hidden on each stage. Though unlike Mega Man X8, thankfully, you're not racing a virus that's trying to pump to contaminate them, thereby making you kill yourself, recklessly trying to save hostages. No, they're just hidden throughout the stages, and sometimes they might be a little tough to get to, but you can get them. And there's 8 per level, and what you do with these hostages is back at the base, there is a nurse character that will allow you to trade in hostages that you rescued along with money to buy new upgrades for your character, like a double jump or an extended hook shot or a super armor item and all kinds of stuff. There's a lot of options. You can equip up to 3 at a time, though, so there's a lot of room for customization there. So you run through the levels, da-da-da-da-da. You get to the end. You fight the boss, again, one of your 8 former companions. You defeat them, and you get their, one of their chips, like their circuit. Whereas in Mega Man, you would get a new weapon by beating a boss. In this game, there's another shop in the main base that once you defeat a robot boss and get their circuit, they will allow you to purchase 2 new moves that are inspired by the boss you defeated. So you still got to spend a little bit of money, though it's not really hard to get the money because you even get rewarded money by beating levels. But you got to spend the money to get the new moves, equip them on your character, and bam, you have eventually a large repertoire of moves you can customize your character with and items to customize your character with to have a lot of fun with it. This game is pretty cool. It's challenging, but it's not brutally challenging on account of the fact that unless I'd missed something, you get unlimited lives. The penalty, though, is that when you get to the end of the level, they do grade you, and that's how you get your bonus money. And if you died but so many times, you don't get any money for that category. But I never really felt compelled to be concerned because you can always go back to levels, do them again, plus beating things up gives you money. So it's not really killing me. It's just try until you get it right. And also, I didn't even mention the checkpoints to make things a little bit easier. You can spend money at checkpoints and stages to refill your health, too. Though healing that way progressively gets more expensive during the level. but it's just another way to make the game a little easier. This game, along with Dominic Nymark's fantastic OST, but then again, that guy always does fantastic music. That's a no-brainer. This game is really fun. It's a game that I recommended to people even before I knew it was going to be good or not. I knew it was going to be good. And I have yet to hear a person knock it. Like, it's been on fire socially.
I'm seeing a lot of praise for online everywhere I go. I think the only criticism I'm seeing about this game is that they didn't put it on Xbox.
Yeah.
It's on everything but. And that's literally the only gripe I've seen from people. It's like, why is a game this good not on everything?
Honestly, I don't understand how development works in that regard to not have it on systems. But maybe it'll eventually make its way there.
The developer said it was a PID games decision, PID plugin, what I don't know what branch this was decided under, but PID need, come on, release it on Xbox, guys. Come on. Come on. It's $17. What do you think of it?
Easy recommendation. Pick it up, play it, have fun with it, and enjoy.
Cool. Anything else you want to say about it?
Buy Dominic Nymark's soundtrack. That is also good.
All right, next game is Punch a Bunch, developed by Ponty Pants, published by No Gravity Games, released July 20th on the Switch for $14.99. Challenging boxing game with an emphasis on player skill that takes time and practice to master. Fight your way to the top through three different championships, each featuring unique opponents. Chris, what is going on in Punch a Bunch?
Actually, unique is literally the second word in the trailer for this game, so they really... You're really going for it.
Nice.
Okay, so Punch a Bunch is a kind of a simplified boxing game. It's a little bit more physics based than something that would be considered like more arcadey. Funny enough, this is going to feel like an insult, but it's really not. But there was this really bizarre free-to-play game that went around like 20 years ago called Sumatori Dreams. And it was somebody's like attempt to make a video game, like a 3D video game for like less than a megabyte or something like that. And they managed. It actually is a sumo game that's like kind of physics-based. It's got really wonky physics kind of on purpose. And, your characters, so you kind of fight, but more or less you're just kind of flailing around, and it's very, very funny. So this game is like an evolution of like that concept, because, Sumotori had just these blank slate, like untextured polygon characters, right? Again, as a style choice. Sorry. So, this game is doing that, but with... like Unreal Engine, like shiny textures and stuff. So you play as a boxer. What is your name? Who knows? Pretty sure it's just, what the name that you choose. And you go through a training session that is required before you can actually start playing the game. And it teaches you how to punch. And so there's a couple different ways that you can... that you can control the character in this game. So you fully have movement over the ring, and your character auto-focuses, on the opponent. So if you circle around your opponent, the camera goes with you, your view goes with you, So you can't just, like, turn away from them and, like, run or something. It's not a wrestling game, it's a boxing game. So, and you would basically use a combination of moving the stick back and using the shoulder buttons to draw back a punch and then throw it forward, essentially, to get different, levels of power with your punch. So a quick punch, of course, is good for disarming, but not good for damage. And of course, a wound back punch, really, really gives it to him. And, of course, it's one of those things where you have a energy bar and a life bar and an energy bar. And if the energy bar gets depleted through getting attacked all the time, then you can go into a dizzy state. You can also kind of get into a winded state, which is a little bit different, but it can lead to a dizzy state. It's all about kind of learning the it's a few intricacies, but intricacies nonetheless. And you also learn how to block and how to like kind of swivel your and kind of dodge with your body and such as it is. And then, like I said, you get into you know, these tournaments where you have to fight five rounds against, you know, increasingly more difficult and more kind of outlandishly themed characters. A little bit like Punch Out in that sense. Like the, there's, you know, and, there's like, you know, you start off with against a generic boxer and then you fight a thug who has like, you know, a bandana and a big old chain around his neck. And then, you know, eventually you fight a Viking. So, you know, it's, you also fight like a monk who can like do mystical power type stuff. So, you know, like kind of that Punch Out thing. And, like I said, you got three levels of difficulty and then there's a player versus mode. And that's it. That's all you get. Is those fights against the computer and fights against somebody you know. So yeah, the other way that you can control your character is that you can actually put it into a more accessible, kind of easy mode where both body shot, you know, quick jabs and bigger swings are kind of mapped to the face buttons so that you can just press those and not really worry about the stick so much. That also is good. That's great for getting in there and, you know, but they do encourage you to try and learn the other way as well. And, you know, you do need to learn something because this is a pretty tough game once you get into it. It took me a very long time to even get through the first, you know, generic boxer, which the game taunts as being the coach's grandkid and not even very good at boxing. So, you know, you got your Glass Joe here still kicking your ass. So, but at least I'm able to make it to the Viking, like, you know, consistently. So that's nice. Yeah, there's really not much else to it. Like I said, the graphical style is just, there are no faces in the game. Everybody is just this kind of blobby yellow person that kind of looks a little bit like, you know, like I said, a Sumo Tori kind of character or like Big Earl from Toe Jam and Earl, but without the cool sunglasses. You do, as you play, unlock some costume options. Nothing too crazy, like mostly it's just different color and texture of gloves and hats and, you know, shorts, basically. Whereas, like I said, the enemies do get a little bit more in the way of accessorizing and stuff to kind of make them stand out. I did find it kind of frustrating that while I'm over here learning these cool, like, or, you know, not cool, but like the basic long punches and short punches and stuff, you know, these enemies are getting like special moves that they can like chain together and stuff, and like I'm like, okay, well, where's my Hadouken then? I don't get anything here. Because like the Viking can charge and he can also do like this really fast pummel, and he likes to do them both at the same time a lot. So that's one of the reasons why I haven't gotten past him yet, is because he's gosh darn cheap. But anyway, apart from that, pretty good game.
Cool. So it's $15. What are your thoughts on it?
$15 sounds like a lot for the amount of content. There's just not a lot of content in this game. It's like I said, it boils down to training mode, one player, three difficulty levels with three sets of bad guys, and then playing a very simple one-on-one, you know, boxing match against somebody else. I will say it's fun enough to play. Certainly, you'll keep coming back to it. So at, you know, it's hard to recommend it at 15, but honestly, that's probably about right. I'm going to give this one a try. Like I said, it's really for boxing fans who do want to like a little bit of a different take, without it being too realistic or too arcadey. It's kind of somewhere in the middle there. The ragdoll physics are amazing because they just let things totally ragdoll and they let all the polygons just run into each other and stuff. So it is very funny to watch somebody lose in this game because they just turn into like undifferentiated texture. So yeah, ultimately I got to give this one a try it, although I do think it's quality. So, you know, maybe look for a sale or something.
Cool. Sounds good.
Yeah.
All right. Next up, Stephanie, developed by Analgesic Productions, published by Rattlake Games, released July 21st on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $19.99. In this 3D puzzle platformer, parkour through an island's massive cave network. You'll take on platforming challenges in lush caverns, subterranean oceans, and surreal cityscapes as you guide three biologists through the shifting spiritual landscape of the island depths. Aki, what's going on in Stephanie?
Okay, and this is all third person, and you play as Amy Ingwen, and Rioa, I think is how you pronounce the last one's name. It's very difficult because none of them actually speak in it. It's all text. And you are three researchers who have been equipped with this new special scanning software thing called Onyx. And you're going to this island that no one really knows anything about, hence you're being sent to figure out what the fuck. Your boat crashes immediately, and you're now stuck on the island. And you're just trying to figure out, what is this island? How does it function? Because none of life here some of it kind of resembles life on the rest of the planet, but not all of it does. And even the stuff that does isn't quite right. So you go around to different plants and animals that you find, and you scan them. And when you scan it, you get pulled into this little mini game where basically it's kind of like a reverse Tetris. You place a bunch of Tetris blocks down in order to get that have three colors on them. Not all of them have each individually three colors, but there's three colors for the blocks that make up each of these pieces. There's blue, red, and green. And you place these to get them to where they match with three of the same color touching at the very least. And after you've placed as many as you can on the little board they give you, or if you run out of pieces, which very rarely ever happens in my experience anyways, you click a button and it starts matching all of them up and gets rid of any of them that have three or more touching. And the rest of them are left on the screen. And you just keep doing this until you fill up this bar, or until you fail and technically get kicked out of the game. I think you're supposed to be dead and therefore start at the beginning, but I'm not sure because I've never failed. But up above, there's this bar that you have to fill up. And in this bar, there's also lines. If you aren't able to get enough points in each round to get to one of those bars, you lose health. You have two health and then you're gone, apparently. Again, it's not too difficult. The rest of this is all platforming. And it's kind of a bitch, to be honest. The platforming is kind of irritating. You run around, you jump up things, it's all 3D platforming. And then you get the ability to run, which gives you the cool ability to raw run and even dash in the air. The only problem with any of this is it requires you to hold the run button. And, you know, that doesn't sound too bad, except for when you hold the run button, the camera, you move in the direction the camera's facing. And you can't move the camera independently anymore. Wherever you're... Yeah. And sometimes you have to run, and you can't go perpendicular or perfectly parallel to the wall to jump and do a wall run. You have to go at an angle. And sometimes the game's like, okay, you go at an angle here. Now you have to jump to a wall on the other side, which is very hard to do because if you can't aim very well, because everywhere the camera's pointed is where you're running. And if you let go of run, you just fall. So it's very difficult because of that. And sometimes you have to run, jump off of something, and then turn 180 degrees basically to get behind what you jumped away from. So you can basically go around this pillar or whatever. And that's also because of how the running mechanic works. It's very difficult to do. That's really my biggest complaint is that the platforming is a real pain in the ass. And it's such a pain in the ass that the devs knew it was a pain in the ass. So they've included a whole slew of nice little settings where you can kind of customize the game, basically cheats they give you access to. And here, matter of fact, because I have the game up, because I've totally not been playing this most of this time, there's the ability to get infinite dash, which is when you jump into the air, you push the run button and it basically shoots you forward just a little bit. That's a dash. In the normal game, you only have one unless you hit certain things in the environment, which will give you an extra one. You can turn it on to where you can just dash forever. You still fall in between your dashes, but it means you get to go a lot further. There's another one called Infinite Jump, which they even have a note on it. maybe try Infinite Dash on its own so it's less game-breaking. Yeah. There's the ability, if for some reason you're like, oh, all these Onyx Links, which is that reverse Tetris-like thing, if those are too hard for you, there's something that makes them easy. And I just recently flipped that to easy just to get through a little faster. Because once you've played one, you've basically played them all.
Yeah.
And there's some other ones, like you can skip text, you can hide the map. I've never particularly even noticed the map. You can hide goals and tips. I turned the tip one off after this first area I went through, because they'll give you the exact same tips in each area. So when you come near a wall, they're like, there'll be this floating transparent question mark. And when you get to it, they'll be like, oh, this is how you do a wall run. And there's one of those in like every fucking level. So that's why they give you the ability to turn that off, because you don't need that in every fucking level, hopefully. There's also some accessibility things, like they remove a screen shake and flash effects. They're not two different options. They're the same option, which is a little weird, but that's fine with me. I'd like both of them off anyways. There's, you know, the ability to turn on a delay before you sprint when you push the sprinting button. I don't really know why that exists. There's an auto sprint button, so you just tap the button instead of holding it down to run. Don't use that. Just don't. You're not going to have a good time if you do that. There's separating the dash and the sprint. I don't think there's a real reason to do that, because no matter what, they're kind of separate anyways. I think it changes it to a different button. There's not really a point to that. And there's a UI scaling, which I don't think works particularly well, personally, because it zooms in, but it zooms in, and that's kind of the problem, because then you can't see as much around you. And yeah, you're basically traveling on this island as these three scientists, and the island is called Cephany? Again, it's kind of hard to tell if that's how it's supposed to be. Probably, who knows. That's the name of the actual island itself. You get to choose which one of the scientists you play as, and you can choose them on the fly as you see fit. There's no benefit to playing any one of them. It's just which design do you like more, because they run just as fast, they jump just as high and just as far, they don't have any special abilities. They play the exact same. There's nothing different about them, other than Amy has red clothes, Rioa has green clothes, and Ingwen has blue clothes. That's it. That's your great grand change. You just connect with all the living creatures and plants of the island, and you're like, yeah, this is life. Life works. It's all cool. And yeah, you get some story bits, because you actually start to connect with the island, as in like the spirit of the island as a actual living thing, and it furthers the story. And I'm not going to tell you any of that, because go play it yourself, you heathens. The game gets kind of repetitive, because the platforming, again, it's kind of a pain in the ass. And I just recently turned on infinite jumping, infinite dashing, because I was just getting frustrated. I just did that today because I forgot that was even an option. Once you flip those on, it's a lot more fun, because then you don't have to sit here and be like, okay, I have to run here, jump off, and then release it and immediately turn and hope try to dash without falling to my death for the 83rd time today. So I personally enjoy the infinite jump thing, just because it gets me things quicker and it makes my life easier. But even in that little reverse Tetris type style game, it's very repetitive, because every creature you come across, you can basically do this interaction with. And technically, there's only a few of them that you absolutely have to do in order to continue the story. But if you want the achievement, there's an achievement for doing like 10 or 20 extra ones beyond just those ones, which is a lot of them. It's not all of them in the game, but yeah, it is a lot of them. And they do change how that game is played a little bit. Like sometimes they're like, oh, here's some rocks that are on the board. you have to place a piece that covers two different sides of it, and then the rock will break and you can use that. Or here it spawns a spore and you have to place something over the spore and it'll delete that, both the spore and that part of that block that covered it will both be deleted, but it reappears in your next round. But then you can obviously use that space again and stuff like that. But that doesn't really change anything about the game all that much. So, like, it's interesting for all of, like, one round, and you usually have to play two or three rounds, and after the first one, it's like, well, this is kind of irritating now. So, this game gets really repetitive really quickly, and this isn't a particularly short game. I think I've put about 14-ish hours into it, I think.
Wow.
I'm pretty close to the end of the game. Chances are you can probably beat this. If you're just hitting just the things you have to hit and getting through this as fast as possible, you can probably beat this in 4 or 5 hours, probably, give or take. But especially if you turn on the infinite jump, then it'll probably only take you like 3-ish. That'll make all the platforming so much easier. Yeah, so, you know, there you go.
Well, it's $20. What are your thoughts?
I like the story behind it, but the gameplay just is very repetitive and irritating. However, it does have all those basically cheats, and those don't affect achievements, just in case anyone's worried. You can flip all of them on if you want. None of your achievements will be affected. I'll say I think it's worth trying it at the very least. If you watch it and you're like, I don't know if this is my thing, wait for a sale and try it. If you're like, this seems kind of cool, go ahead and get it. Because I do like the overall story that the game has. It's very interesting. And I like how the characters interact with each other on the occasion that they do. The gameplay leaves a little bit to be desired, but the cheats make it a lot easier to... Most of my issues with the repetitiveness kind of go away at that point, because They make it so much faster and easier to get through it. I think it's a try it at the very least.
Hey, sounds good. Quick breaking news. Just got word from William Reyes of the 1UPS that he is half drunk and pooping.
He's pulling a Jacob. Cool.
He wanted me to announce it on the show. He says, hey, tell them I'm taking a dump, a juicy one. Tell him I've changed my diet to high fiber, so my dumps are soft and beautiful like a dandelion.
Jacob will love to hear that.
And then he sent the picture. But next game to talk about is Spirit Hunters Infinite Horde, developed and published by Creature Cauldron. Released July 19th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. You are the spirit hunters in this action roguelite. Slay huge waves of monsters and harvest their souls for ever-increasing power. Unlock many playable characters, abilities, maps, and more through a deep progression system. For now, what is going on in Spirit Hunters Infinite Horde?
So, this is an interesting game for me in that I had a friend who's been talking this up, because it's been on Steam for a little while. And he's been talking this game up quite a bit as something I need to try. In fact, he talked it up to me as recently as 2 days before you offered the code, which is when I learned it was coming to consoles. So I was like, oh, well, I'll give this game a shot. And while at first glance, your first thought might be to say, oh, wow, look, another Survivors game. In which case, admittedly, you wouldn't be wrong. It is another Survivors game. I do feel as though it differentiates itself enough from Vampire Survivors that it can still be a genuinely fun time. I mean, I had fun with it. So the idea is that you start off by choosing a character, and then that character has to choose a starting weapon. You start out with a few, and you'll unlock more through means I'll mention later. And depending on what weapon that character starts with, they get what's referred to as a starting synergy, which is basically a buff or a boost to that specific weapon. So once you choose it and you get dumped onto the map, bam, you are in survivor mode. Whereas in Vampire Survivors, the game runs for about 30 minutes, and then eventually you just try to outlast until the game kills you. This game's a bit different. stages have a finite amount of time they're meant to be played. And as the game progresses through that, there is a bar at the bottom that will kind of like indicate like how when enemy bosses will start popping up on the screen. Because every once in a while you're fighting normal monsters, this gauge will move up to say, hey, this is how far along in the level you are. And then out of nowhere, you'll hear a sound and a boss will show up, like our mini boss will show up, and you have to kill it too. The mini bosses are generally tankier, weirder versions of enemies that are on the stage. But as you're running around having your attacks auto-attack, meaning you don't press the button, the attacks trigger themselves, you'll be doing damage to these jerks and killing them. Killing enemies or mini bosses or whatever will yield you a variety of things. You can get experience points, which allow you to level up and then add yourself, which upon level gets you a new perk. Perks can be anything from new attacks. You can have up to 4 attacks equipped. A pet, with once you've unlocked them, pets are sort of passive bonuses you can have. You'll unlock buffs, or not buffs, but augmentations or beefings to the attacks you've already got. And then aside from that, you'll just keep at it, do it again and again and again. As you're running around the map, you aren't just outlasting the clock. There are things you want to find while you're out there to hopefully, you know, make your odds of survival better. But in addition to that, things that will allow you to unlock other objects or things once the level is over. You might come across a mining station, and when you get to a mining station or a treasure chest, which has items, or a number of other little bonuses, you don't just pick them up. Instead, there is a magic circle that will appear around the object, and you have to stay within it until the magic circle is completed in order for the object to be interfaced. If you mine an object from ore and you get that to complete, you'll pick up all the ore. If you mine, if you open a treasure chest, you'll get all the loot that pops out of it, so on and so forth. And the enemy waves do not want you to do that, so they are going to be an absolute pain in your ass. If you get out of the circle before it's complete, though, you'll get a few seconds before it starts to tie back down to zero, and you have to start over again. So if you're going to commit, commit hard. Eventually, you'll get to come across a shop on the board, too, because they're also picking up money in addition to the ore. And money can be spent at the shop to get quick buffs, such as more health, more items that will allow you to level up faster, various little objects that will allow you to kind of stay in the game a little bit longer. Now, back to the normal thing. Once you get to the end of the level, 15 minutes has run up. The boss for that stage will appear, and they will kind of trap you in a bit of an arena with it, and you have to defeat it in order to end the stage. And then once you've completed it, you'll get graded on how well you did on the level, you know, how many enemies you killed, you know, goals you've met, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll dump you back out to what's called the Oracle screen. And the Oracle will help you upgrade your character or upgrade yourself as a whole by spending collectibles you found during the stages on a massive skill tree, quote unquote, skill tree grid. This skill tree, when you purchase nodes, can unlock new abilities. It can unlock buffs to the abilities that you have. It can unlock new characters, new stages, new just passive bonuses, like more hit points and things like that. It's a lot going on here. And I like the fact that whereas in Vampire Survivors, the upgrades mainly came... I mean, there was an upgrade system in that too, but I kind of like the idea of having a visual skill tree. And there's also something that they didn't have in that game. Whereas Vampire Survivors, you had to like occasionally come across a secret or crack a secret thing, like combining these two animals at the end of the world will get you a special bird. In this game, the quote unquote secret element lies in the form of challenges. There's a ledger that's existing at the bottom of the screen on the Oracle page, and when you go to it, the game will kind of set you up with challenges that are existing for each character that you can get. There's a challenge for each level that can be unlocked, and the challenges usually revolve around you getting to the end of the stage with a certain combination of weapons at a specific level or higher apiece, and sometimes specifically weapons or items you cannot use. They don't prevent you from picking them up, but if you do pick them up, you ultimately end up failing the challenge. So, for example, one weapon that I like is the ice ring, where it freezes enemies around you. One of the first challenges I attempted to do straight out said, you cannot use the ice ring. I bought it. I saw that I failed the mission. And I started over and just sucked it up. It's like, okay, no more ice ring for me. And I missed it. It's a really, really good attack. But I like the game giving you these constraints and saying, get better at the game using these things so you'll feel like you got the most out of it when you're done. And completing these challenges unlocks things for you too. So it's worth your time to engage them. There's a lot going on in this game. There's a lot to unlock. There's a lot to experience. There's a lot to play. All nestled in a very sweet package of just dodging obstacles and enemies and letting your character auto-attack based on the upgrades you've purchased. It's just fun. I like the game. I'm sticking with it. I'm going to do a lot more with it in addition to what I've already done with it. I feel as though both this and Vampire Survivors have a place in a library. Beyond these two, I don't know. This genre has exploded over the last couple of months to a year. I ain't got time for it. But I know these two, that game, and also this game, Spirit Hunters, are fun titles. I very much recommend it. And if you've never played any of the games like this, well, quite frankly, I think you're in for a very good time with this one because it's going to surprise you how fun it is where you don't get to... Oh, you do press a button one time. I forgot the one last thing. And I swear I'm done. I had to make sure I caught it, though. There is a time where you press a button to attack. As you defeat enemies, you'll slowly increase a gauge for a super attack, and every character has their own. And when that gets filled up, you can press a button to trigger said super attack, which has a variety of effects. Like the one character I primarily use, even after unlocking others, was she has an ability where when you activate it, a spiral effect appears around her. She sucks in all the experience point orbs that are on the screen, but she doesn't collect them. Instead, they stay outside the ring, and they work kind of like a buzzsaw hitting enemies for damage.
Interesting.
And then when the attack wears off, you absorb all the experience and level up anyway. So that's a pretty cool attack.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Power-ups and all that jazz. It's a $10 game. What are your thoughts on it?
Easy recommendation. I had an episode of Easy Recommendations. I like that.
Hey, I'm always happy when that happens. Should we see if we got one more Easy Recommendation?
Dun, dun, dun. Dun, dun, ooh, dun. Wait.
Final game to talk about, Full Quiet, developed by Retrotainment, published by 8-Bit Legit, released July 7th on Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch, and PC for $9.99. In this open-world game of survival, mystery, and adventure, you must learn how Pap and his radio buddies maintained their radio grid, protected the lands they now walk, and silenced the forest in order to find your missing son. Chris, what is going on in Full Quiet?
Very informative.
Chris is gone. Oh, I didn't even notice he's muted.
Oh, yeah, I'm muted, sorry.
He's probably committed to the joke, too. At least I hope that's what he was doing.
No, I started talking.
I get it.
All right, well, Full Quiet, yes. So it is a new 8-bit game. It is actually, presumably, because I believe this is the thing with, you know, legit 8-bit, is that it actually could operate on a NES system. I believe there is a cartridge version of this out there.
I believe so, too, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool. Pretty advanced for an NES game, so I appreciate that right off the bat. You play as a guy, I guess, Pap? Who knows? It's a weird name. And you just kind of get dropped into this jungle with a gun that infinitely refills itself. That is to say, you have so many bullets, and then you have to go through a reload sequence, but you can purposely reload your gun so that you don't get overwhelmed in the process. And the job is to, explore and solve puzzles until you can get to the point where, you know, the plot happens and stuff. As with many NES games that didn't come with a, or that, you know, for which you didn't have the instruction book, this game doesn't really tell you much about how to play it, or what is expected of you, or how to even, like, really interact with things, what your menus do, that you have more than one menu. This game does include an instruction manual, though. It's got this nice handwritten on a graph paper vibe going on. And, there's a lengthy description of the controls. While it does function with an NES pad, it does better utilize stuff that has the X and Y button and also the shoulder buttons, because those have a use in this game. That's, you don't have to, do it, but it does make things easier, so that's kind of cool. A lot of it is walking around into environments and just kind of figuring out what to pick up and how it interacts with other stuff. A little bit of a run and click adventure game as far as that goes. However, there are enemies of the kind of alien variety. And interestingly, so if you, let's say, go into a room where there's some enemies and there's something like a note on the wall to read or a puzzle to complete, When you access that note or read that puzzle, the room resets and the enemies are back. I have been killed this way before. And, you know, it's tough because, like, you know, you're supposed... The very first thing they tell you to do is locate a cabin, you know, and they say this is where you can rest up and save your game, get there by 2 a.m. or else you're going to be in a lot of trouble. You know, you do find a cabin and it is mechanically locked. You have no idea how to get in there, and that's your first goal. Figure out what the game expects of you. Because that stuff ain't gonna be in the instruction books. I will admit
this is an old school game all the way. Like,
yeah,
NES games back in that day didn't hold your hand.
No, they usually relied on the instruction books to give you at least some kind of clue, or at least tell you how to interact with things. This one, no such luck. So, I mean, it does kind of. It's like, it's kind of esoteric and weird in that sense, you know. And plus, the game fully utilizes Morse code, which is fun.
Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. So, you know, you have a, I believe the instruction book. Yeah, the instruction book has an entire, like, Morse code, like... alphabet in the back of it and stuff. But yeah, it's like, you know, and you get like a full enemy roster and weapons description and stuff and like things that describe what all the stuff is, but you know, again, it's still very esoteric. I definitely recommend going to the internet to read about this one. Having said though, like it's really fun to kind of wander around and see what does what, and you know, again, you're not hindered by things like, you know, limited ammo or whatever. So that's really good. It has a bit of a Metroid quality to it. Like, not... I mean, like, old school Metroid. Like, actual NES Metroid, not, like, the other ones. It's got a little bit of... okay, this is gonna sound more like an insult than what it is, but I got big Gilligan's Island vibes from this game. There was a Gilligan's Island game that was a confusing explorathon on the NES. It's actually not a bad game per se, like it's generally considered one, but the thing that people like had against it is that they couldn't figure out what the heck to do at any point. So that's you know, that's again the kind of vibe I got from this. But it looks good for an NES game. They definitely did a great job using the different palettes to kind of create, you know, really unique, backdrops, and like everything is kind of like there's some stuff that's like cool and sci-fi and mysterious. Having said, there's also several ways to soft lock yourself because you just don't know what to do, and again, the game isn't going to tell you or really make it intuitive at all or anything like that. So you know. Like I said, definitely ask the internet on what to do on this game.
Yeah, it's a $10 game. What are your thoughts on it?
Well, $10 is kind of the going rate as far as these retro throwback games go. This is one of the higher quality ones I've seen in a while, and I quite like that. I would say it is worth $10. Just understand that, you know, too.
It's like a good 20-hour game if you get through the whole thing.
It's got several maps. They kind of reveal that pretty early on, that they're like, you're actually going to be spending a lot of time with this one, which, you know, again, that also gives me kind of you know, Metal Gear vibes, because Metal Gear's pretty big too, and again, Metal Gear doesn't really tell you what to do either. You know, you kind of have to figure out basically what to go and what to do. So yeah, if that's the kind of mystery that you enjoy out of your 8-bit games, you know, more thinking than action, but there is action. I mean, there definitely is, but, you know, this is a thinking man's game for sure, and if that sounds appealing to you, then yeah, worth the $10 for sure. A lot of good work went into this game. If you're just looking for, like, you know, another side-scrolling, run-and-gun action game kind of deal, this one might be a little too slow for you, but, you know, you might still try it.
Cool. Now the big question. What? Cart only, you can get in a green glowing cartridge for $50. You can get game with the box and manual in the green glow in the dark cartridge for $60. Or they have a full quiet limited edition with special artwork and a silver cartridge for $80. Should people spring for any of those? Should collectors drop the coin?
I mean, gosh, I would love to play this on an actual NES. That would be really cool. Yeah, I mean, that, you know, honestly, the is a physical NES game worth it is so subjective of a question. I mean, obviously, for some things like, you know, the Metal Storm reissue where, like, buying limited runs, like, collector's edition version of it that came with, like, literally a model of an M308 gunner, American style, and, like, all this other cool stuff with it for half the price of what the used cart goes for the original game. Yeah, that was pretty darn worth it. Easy to say. With this one, it's a $10 download versus a $50 cartridge. Honestly, that's going to be up to you, man. I do like the game. I don't know.
Something if you could see yourself investing in?
I could see myself going for the $60 version for sure. Just because that is kind of the thing I do, is that if I like a game, I do tend to seek out the good one.
You don't want this the one, silver like I said, cartridge special edition?
You know, I'll have to look at it. I might actually be more tempted to do that
one.
Well,
hit up retrotainmentgames.com to check out their full list of games that you could pick up. It'll be shipping soon, so they're still taking pre-orders. You have not Sweet. Missed out yet.
Nice.
All right, well, that is it for this episode. We made it through. Congrats, everyone. We did it.
Huzzah. Look at how early.
This means laundry folding and bed for me. Yes,
laundry right. folding, bed, and music. Speaking of music, let's see. How about some Ale Sean this episode?
Heck sure. Yeah.
Ale Sean.
We mentioned him before.
My friend from Missouri. Indeed. I'm going to have like some second friend from Missouri contact me on Facebook or something and be like, hey, what the hell? And I'm going to be like, I'm sorry. I forgot where any of you live.
I just want you to get some random message out of the blue that's just like, hey, the hell?
Yeah.
That's like me doing a podcast, and in the middle of the podcast, I just get a text that says, fuck you. What the,
I mean,
what the hell is this about? And it's William Reyes. So I just
yeah. know he's still down to party.
I've gotten those kind of messages before. It's pretty great. I have one friend that will message me. One friend was drunk once, and he said that he had peed on the Statue of Liberty. And, wow. Yeah, and then it turned out what it actually was the router at the place where he was staying. So he had yeah, half the story right.
Way confused the two things.
That's a turns slight out he, difference.
Turns out he didn't pee, he actually shit himself instead.
I mean, you know, it's, stories differ.
Well, I guess the Statue of Liberty was not his IP address.